Domestic production is growing. We are producing things that had made us dependent to the West for years. But today, we are self-sufficient in the production of 1,600 medical goods and equipment, knowledge-based products, agricultural products, home appliances, and the list goes on. Expansion of ties with Russia and China is very beneficial for Iran. We can benefit a lot from energy swap with Russia and become the energy hub in the region. China's market, on the other hand, is noteworthy.
In the meantime, Iranian oil exports hit new highs in the last 2 months of 2022 and are making a strong start to 2023 despite U.S. sanctions, according to companies that track the flows on higher shipments to China, Venezuela, and other destinations. Energy consultant SVB International said Iran's crude exports in December averaged around 1.14 million barrels per day, up 42,000 BPD from November, and the highest 2022 figure SVB has reported based on estimates given earlier. According to analysts, Iran is also ready to boost sales to former buyers like Europe and South Korea in case the nuclear deal was revived. Despite all the challenges, Iran will accordingly try to sway Britain, France, and Germany in future nuclear talks by presenting itself as EU's potential savior in battling the energy crisis. Nevertheless, any appeal to Europe is useless without a clear understanding by the U.S. that it must lift the sanctions as part of a JCPOA revival. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Till next time, take care.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The limelight.
Swiss inflation unexpectedly accelerated last month, suggesting the central bank will need to continue hiking borrowing costs. Consumer prices in Switzerland increased 3.4% in February from a year earlier, the Federal Statistics Office has said recently. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Reuters, Swiss inflation increased at a higher-than-expected rate in February, data showed recently, raising chances that the Swiss National Bank will raise interest rates this month. Consumer prices increased last month by 3.4% year-on-year, up from 3.3% in January, and well above the SNB target range for price stability, defined as between 0 to 2%. The central bank is due to announce its policy decision on March 23rd, with the market seeing a 91% probability of a 50 basis point increase from the current level of 1%, especially following recent weakening of the Swiss franc, which has helped limit price rises from costlier imports. The SNB declined to comment on the data. The inflation rate was more than economists had predicted, with Credit Suisse anticipating 2.9% and UBS and J. Safra Sarasin 3%. Prices rose 0.7% month-on-month due to rising rents and more expensive petrol. Core inflation, which strips out volatile items like fuel and food, was 0.8% from January and 2.4% from February 2022. I think a 50 basis point rate increase in March is nailed on, especially after this reading, said Karsten Janius, an economist at J. Safra Sarasin, adding, we currently expect the SNB to raise rates 25 basis points in June, but if inflation remains high, we cannot rule out a 50 BP increase. Credit Suisse economist Maxim Baran said the SNB would not just look at the February data when deciding its next move, but rate increases were likely. Recently, the economist raised his forecast for SNB's policy rate, saying he now expected the central bank to increase to 1.75% in March, up from his previous forecast for 1.5%. For June, he expects a 50 basis point rise to 2.25%, up from his previous forecast for an increase to 1.75%. Baran said, depending on the progress of the disinflationary process over the summer, we would not rule out additional rate hikes in the second half of the year. Also, according to RT, inflation in Switzerland accelerated in February, large due to soaring airfares, rent, and energy costs. Figures from the Federal Statistical Office showed recently consumer prices surged 3.4% last month year-on-year and were higher than the median estimate by Bloomberg, which predicted a slower rate of 3.1%. The February jump reflected rising prices for air transport, package holidays, rents, and gasoline, indicating that the country's central bank will have to tighten its monetary policy, the media outlet said. Core inflation in Switzerland, excluding energy and food prices, also accelerated for a third successive month and reached 2.4%, the data shows. While Switzerland has managed to maintain the lowest pace of inflation among major European economies, persistent price growth will likely force the central bank to hike rates as underlying inflationary dynamics are stronger than what the SNB is prepared to tolerate, Swiss National Bank President Thomas Jordan said. Swiss inflation saw a 3.3% rise year-on-year in January, driven by surging gas and electricity prices. The rate also exceeded economists' forecast of 2.9% and was the highest since August 2022. Housing and energy prices surged 5.1%, while public transport costs climbed 4.7% year-on-year. Gas prices alone rocketed by 40.3% in January in annual terms, while electricity soared by 25.5%. The central bank has also expressed concern that companies are now more likely to pass on higher prices to customers. Utility providers adjusted prices at the beginning of the year, passing on increased costs to Swiss households. Swiss state regulator Elcom previously predicted that electricity would become an average of 27% more expensive for consumers.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Hit me. Please.
We the people.
On February 3, 2023, a Norfolk Southern freight train carrying thousands of gallons of toxic and hazardous material derailed in East Palestine, Ohio, in the United States. The train blazed and burned for more than 2 days, releasing toxins in the air. Residents within a mile radius of the crash site were evacuated. The National Transportation Safety Board announced that the derailment was 100% preventable. Thousands of fish were found dead in the waterways around the area. An estimated 45,000 animals, especially aquatic animals, have been found dead as a direct result of the train derailment. The Norfolk Southern freight train that was operating from the Terminal Railroad Association of St. Louis Yard in Madison, Illinois, to Norfolk Southern's Conway Yard in Conway, Pennsylvania, was a 2.8-kilometer-long train that was carrying 141 loaded cars and 9 empty ones. 20 of the cars were carrying hazardous materials, and the train employee said that after departure, it had at least one mechanical failure before it derailed in East Palestine, Ohio. 51 cars derailed, ending up in a pile that caught fire and burned for days. 11 of the cars that derailed were carrying hazardous material, which burned and released toxins in the air and polluted the water system and the land of surrounding areas. Initial findings revealed that a mechanical problem that initiated an emergency brake system was what caused the derailment.
When a train carrying hundreds of thousands of gallons of chemicals comes off the tracks and bursts into flames, when the smoke looks like this and makes the air smell strange for days, it doesn't take an expert to know people will be scared, that they'll worry. If it can kill thousands of fish, what can it do to them? Within days, the burned-out carriages had been pushed aside to get the trains running again. Life, though, is far from back to normal. And the messages that were meant to reassure, for many, have had the opposite effect.
We're not getting any truth. I'm not safe being here. There is no way we are safe being here.
The East Palestine mayor declared a state of emergency and several emergency agencies gathered at the scene. A day after the derailment, pollutants were seen in Sulphur Run and Leslie Run rivers. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine called the incident a matter of life and death and activated the Ohio National Guard, while Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro ordered an evacuation of areas that border the derailment site. What were the causes of the train derailment?
The exact cause is still being investigated, but it is the underlying cause is very clear. And that is the decaying state of the rail infrastructure in the state of Ohio, which is typical of problems which are faced by the railroad and transportation infrastructure across the United States. No significant direct investment has been put into this area of the economy or of society in well over 60 years. And although it was outstanding in the 1950s, 60s, and even 70s, decay is having its inevitable results. Infrastructure investment is not, as the saying goes, fashionable. Everyone likes to build new roads and new bridges, but there is much less interest in maintaining old railroads and old roads, and that is the root cause of the problem.
The two governors on the next day ordered a mandatory evacuation of all residents within a 1 by 2 mile radius. The Norfolk Southern Emergency Crews conducted a controlled release and burn of the 5 tanks that had not derailed and contained vinyl chloride to prevent an explosion, releasing more toxins into the air. The evacuation was finally lifted on February 9th, almost a week after the derailment.
I just want justice for our community. I want the community back as it was before this devastation. I can smell the chemicals in the air. It's quite disturbing. It settles in the evening more so. It's pretty desolate when you go to the dollar store at night in the evening where the chemicals lie low and the cars are out of the community. I can notice it so much more. And it started making me nauseous.
Message that I've learned very early in life and with every other community I've dealt with, and this community is going to do exactly that. Nobody knows what happened to them better than them. They know what they experienced. They know what they're feeling. They know what the reactions are. They've seen the dead fish, the dead animals. They instinctually know something's wrong. They instinctually know, you're not listening to me because I was here, but you're going to tell me something otherwise. And they're banding together, and they're going to stay real connected to that inner voice. They know what they know. Nobody's going to tell them otherwise. They know what they've experienced, and they're running on instincts and a connection to an event that they were a part of. And they're going to stand strong in their message. And that's exactly where they need to be when you feel so uncertain about information that you're getting.
On February 23rd, the National Transportation Safety Board officials called the derailment preventable and traumatic and indicated an overheated wheel bearing, which was 253 degrees hotter than the air temperature, as the likely cause of the catastrophe. According to an NTSB report, a defect detector built into the railway sent an alarm message to the train's crew after it recorded high temperatures in the wheel bearing of one of the cars. Could this crisis have been averted, and what should be done in the future to avoid such catastrophes?
First of all, the railway system should be nationalized. It's ridiculous that it's divided up in the hands of various capitalists across the country, who then just use it as a milk cow to make as much money as possible. The last year, the company that controlled this disaster, they made, I think it was $2.8 billion. I can't remember the exact sum, but it was billions of dollars they made. And yet the workers are poorly paid. They are not given any leave for sick. They're not even given sick leave. And it's the mentality in the U.S. In fact, the Congress just passed a special, I don't know if it's a bill or if it's just some kind of announcement, that socialism is bad, that we don't want anything to do with socialism or communism. This was a recent Congress legislation. And in fact, the only answer to this disaster is socialism for the railway, at least. when you want government control of infrastructure of transport. That should be a bottom line. But we live in a neoliberal age, and we like to give our infrastructure, even our water, to private capitalists who then just make billions of dollars on it and don't care what the environmental and safety conditions are.
3 weeks after the derailment and the release of dangerous toxins into the environment, U.S. President Joe Biden finally ordered federal agencies to check on families affected by the disaster. Teams from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency will visit homes in the area to check on the well-being of residents. Residents of the counties affected, however, have a distrust for federal agencies and are worried about the toxins released in their environment and how it is affecting them.
Unfortunately, this is not a quick fix. This is going to be a long game.
House Republicans have initiated an investigation into the February 3rd Ohio train derailment, in which they are blaming Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg for a delayed response to the disaster. James Comer, chairman of the House Oversight Committee, sent a letter to the Transportation Secretary stating the department's responsibility to ensure safe and reliable transport in the U.S., claiming that the department ignored the catastrophe for over a week. What are officials doing in response to the crisis?
The answer is, first of all, a great deal. They are taking it seriously. They are certainly acting responsibly. But we do not know the full details of what they are doing. And there is concern and even some skepticism over that. The widespread fear, certainly in the area of East Palestine, is that the hazardous materials spill was much worse than was originally admitted, and that it could cause long-term health disruptions and even lead to the permanent abandonment of the city of East Palestine. It is too soon to say if that is indeed going to be the case, but there are certainly widespread fears about it.
In the past, major rail accidents have pushed Congress to take actions necessary in preventing future disasters. When 25 people were killed in a collision between two trains in Los Angeles, California, back in 2008, Congress mandated a safety system called Positive Train Control to be installed more widely in the railway system. Safety proposals were also suggested during the Obama administration, when several derailments with trains carrying hazardous material took place, but only some of them were implemented.
His reaction was to immediately go to Ukraine and Poland to drum up more war hysteria in Ukraine. So, and when he was asked about it, he just brushed it aside and said, that's not so important. And the minister secretary of transport, Buttigieg, he didn't bother going. So no one bothered going, at least in the last week. Apparently, in the last day, someone from the transport department has actually been there. So there's some grudging acknowledgement of the seriousness. The only political official that went, political person, was Trump. And of course, that is part of his war against Biden. So he jumps at any opportunity. But even though he was responsible, at least in part, for the bad state of the railways under his presidency, and he was famously limiting any kind of government oversight of anything. So that included government oversight of the safety.
Railway operators have been reducing their staff in the past decade, even though the amount of freight trains on railways has increased. The operators have been trying to cut costs, and on board the derailed Ohio train were only two rail workers and one trainee who would have to monitor 150 cars. Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio said thousands of workers have been laid off from Norfolk Southern. Then they don't invest in safety rules and safety regulations, and this kind of thing happens. Are there cover-ups with regards to the magnitude of the crisis?
Again, we do not know, but there is certainly widespread suspicion that this is indeed the case, both in national watchdog organizations and comments on social media. And also, it is very clear there is widespread suspicion about this among local inhabitants in the area. And again, the track record is not reassuring. If you look back even through the 1960s and 1950s, hundreds of thousands of people developed cancer from above the atmosphere in nuclear testing in the Nevada desert, especially as early as the 1950s. Even the famous movie star John Wayne is believed to have contracted the lung cancer, although he was a heavy smoker too, that eventually killed him, because he made films in an area of the Nevada desert very close to where nuclear testing, or in Utah, very close to where nuclear testing was being carried out at the time in the 1950s. And there are many such examples of toxic fallout and environmental issues since then. The Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, was only founded by Richard Nixon in 1970. And even since then, there have been many such incidents. So you are right, there is concern, and the concern is real.
Meanwhile, former U.S. President Donald Trump visited the derailment site in East Palestine, Ohio. He called the response towards the derailment a betrayal and added that he hopes when Biden visits Ohio after he finishes touring Ukraine, that he would have some money left over to spend on this disaster. This is while Democrats have shot back accusing Trump and his administration of rolling back train and chemical regulations.
I sincerely hope that when your representatives and all of the politicians get here, including Biden, they get back from touring Ukraine, that he's got some money left over. That was a tragedy, close to an unbelievable tragedy. Could have been really bad.
While politicians are playing the blame game, it has been estimated that close to 45,000 aquatic animals have been killed as a result of the derailment of the train and the release of toxins into the environment. According to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, close to 39,000 minnows and another 6,000 other species, including fish, amphibians, and crayfish, have died because of this disaster.
It's still too early to say. Initially, the company responsible immediately sent out an offer of $1,000 to everybody that has their address, including the zip code that where the accident took place. I don't know what the zip code was, 12345. So anyone with that zip code could get $1,000. But this was dismissed as trivial. And in fact, it was. It was this kind of gimmicky, this is the way American politics.
The toxic wastewater from the Ohio train is being sent to Texas to be disposed, raising concern among residents and local officials. The material has been transported to Deer Park, Texas, where Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo said that it's a very real problem. We were told yesterday the materials were coming, only to learn today they've been here for a week. She added that the government officials have provided the information they had, but it turns out they don't seem to have the full information themselves.
I and my team learned yesterday that
firefighting water from East Palestine was going to be sent to Deer Park, which is one of the 34 cities in Harris County, for disposal. I know that our community was taken aback by the news, just as I was. And I don't want to be sitting on information that is relevant to this very public, very concerning disaster that is still ongoing in Ohio. First of all, we heard the news yesterday that some contaminated firefighting water will be coming to Harris County. Today, in speaking with Texas Molecular, we learned that, in fact, some of the firefighting water is already here. According to Texas Molecular, the water began arriving to Harris County, quote, last Wednesday-ish. That's what they told us. According to Texas Molecular, Harris County has received 500,000 gallons of firefighting water and will be receiving up to 1.5 million more gallons for around 2 million gallons total.
The residents of East Palestine and nearby affected areas have filed at least 9 lawsuits that alleges negligence and carelessness caused by the train derailment and chemical spill. Court records show the claims seek class action status with more than $5 million in damages. The lawsuits also claim that Norfolk Southern burned the vinyl chloride and turned it into toxic gas instead of disposing it safely. What would be the outcome of lawsuits filed regarding the derailment incident?
The U.S. legal system, there are both positive and negative aspects to this, but it's certainly, in contrast, for example, to Britain, there is a vast opportunity for private individuals or private interest groups to take legal action, to file lawsuits for damages in these areas. It is common for, these days, for example, for environmental disasters back, or extremely irresponsible treatment back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s by both the US government and by major corporations, having to shell out hundreds of millions and in some cases as much as billions of dollars in payments to compensate families whose loved ones died or were seriously ill or became invalids for life from the long-term consequences of environmental disasters, toxic spills, and other events. So the concern that the companies involved in this particular case could even be driven out of business by legal actions is very real. And this is something that will play out not quickly, but over many years to come.
Calling the lobbying influence of the rail industry a big problem, politicians are once again pointing to problems of America's infrastructure and how very little investment has been done for years to upgrade the system. The ailing infrastructure puts people's lives in danger, while the desperately needed funds are finding their way to Ukraine and other groups fighting proxy wars on behalf of the United States.
The most noted environmentalist, Ralph Nader, he was saying, he said, I told you so. I've been warning you for decades about this and no one listens. So it takes a disaster before someone listens. So, you know, there is talk, there are environmentalists, but the whole, really, this should be part of a peace movement. Against war, because war is the biggest environmental disaster. And if people were strong on the issue of peace, all of these issues could be dealt with in a stronger. This isn't the only case. The environment, on all aspects of the environment, we're in a crisis, and that part of that is the war that's now taking place in Ukraine. So this. We really have to try and be activists. Unfortunately, the level of activism in the West is very low. There's very weak peace movement. Perhaps in the next year, this will change with the war in Ukraine. There's finally beginning to come together, a network of people to fight all of these evils that we're experiencing of the environment, of human relations between nations.
Whenever a disaster happens, politicians first blame each other, and then most fingers turn to lobbies and corporations that benefit from not following safety rules. The corporations and lobbies are essentially the entities that are running the United States. Billions of dollars are being spent on wars and on the military, ultimately filling the pockets of large weapons manufacturers, while they could have been spent on infrastructure to avoid these disasters.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
IRIB English Radio.
According to leaked documents, there are various documents that reveal U.S. homeland security problems. DHS has a little-known domestic surveillance program, as well as concerns over political abuse and retaliation. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Politico, citing internal documents, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is operating a virtually unknown intelligence gathering program within the U.S. Along the revelations were concerns by many DHS staff that their work was inappropriate or illegal, and about the influence of politics on operations. The Overt Human Intelligence Collection Program, OHIC, has been in existence since at least 2016, according to Politico, which did not disclose how it obtained the documents. Run by the DHS Office of Intelligence and Analysis, INA, OHIC is intended to gather information about threats such as organized crime and transnational drug trafficking. The program allows DHS officials to seek interviews with just about anyone in the U.S., including people held in local jails and federal prisons. Concerns that not having an attorney present for the interviews might violate people's civil rights reportedly led to that particular element of OHIC being paused in 2022. Patrick Toomey of the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, told Politico, "While this questioning is purportedly voluntary, DHS policy ignores the coercive environment these individuals are held in. It fails to ensure that individuals have a lawyer present, and it does nothing to prevent the government from using a person's words against them in court. Carrie Buchner, a former DHS advisor and congressional liaison, called it immoral that the agency might be interviewing folks that still have constitutional privileges without their lawyer present. Other documents show that some DHS employees had similar misgivings about the legality and morality of the department's operations. An email from November 2020, just after the U.S. election, summarizes a dozen listening sessions with INA employees. Among their complaints was that many of their tasks were law enforcement matters and not for an intelligence organization, and that the rubric of departmental support seemed like a loophole that they exploit to conduct questionable activities. The same email quoted one employee who called the field operations division leadership shady and said it runs like a corrupt government. Those who offered feedback or criticism the leadership did not appreciate, said another, might find themselves getting transferred to the U.S.-Mexico border or to Portland. Portland, Oregon, was the site of a media scandal involving the DHS in the summer of 2020. When violent Antifa demonstrators attacked the federal courthouse. At the end of July, the Washington Post accused INA of spying on journalists and protesters. 2 days later, INA head Brian Murphy was ousted. His replacement, Joseph Maher, revoked a previous instruction interpreting then-President Donald Trump's order to protect federal buildings as well as monuments from rioters, and said the INA had determined a narrower interpretation was better aligned with its authority. Maher went on to work for the January 6th Select Committee, stood up by congressional Democrats to accuse Trump of insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Acting Deputy Undersecretary for Intelligence Enterprise Operations, Stephanie Dobich, who authored the instruction Maher revoked, was later hired in a permanent capacity. In a March 2022 email commenting on the Intelligence Community Climate Survey analysis, Dobich noted that the most significant instances of distortion or suppression of intelligence analysis reported by INA staff had to do with protection of bureaucratic interest. The same survey for the fiscal year 2020 noted that the DHS workforce has a general mistrust of leadership resulting from orders to conduct activities they perceive to be inappropriate, bureaucratic, or political. Intercept had earlier reported that the Department of Homeland Security is quietly broadening its efforts to curb speech it considers dangerous. An investigation by The Intercept has found years of internal DHS memos, emails, and documents obtained via leaks and ongoing lawsuit, as well as public documents, illustrate an expansive effort by the agency to influence tech platforms. The work, much of which remains unknown to the American public, came into clearer view earlier this year when DHS announced a new disinformation governance board, a panel designed to police misinformation, false information spread unintentionally, disinformation, false information spread intentionally, and malinformation, factual information shared typically out of context with harmful intent that allegedly threatens U.S. interest. While the board was widely ridiculed, immediately scaled back and then shut down within a few months. Other initiatives are underway as DHS pivots to monitoring social media now that its original mandate, the War on Terror, has been wound down. Behind closed doors and through pressure on private platforms, the U.S. government has used its power to try to shape online discourse. According to meeting minutes and other records appended to a lawsuit filed by Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, a Republican who is also running for Senate, discussions have ranged from the scale and scope of government intervention in online discourse to the mechanics of streamlining takedown requests for false or intentionally misleading information.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3rd, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. The ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Office and Police Training. In addition, with regard to economic investments, if you want to make an investment in the economic development of the country, you cannot do this if there is no security. Transit cannot be carried out without security. Production is not possible without security. Security is the substructure for all of these things. Well, armed organizations are the ones who provide this never-ending universal need of the country and the general public. This is something you should be proud of. The army, the IRGC, the law enforcement organization, and the Basij all provide security in different ways. A person who attacks a police station is attacking the security of the country. The one who attacks one of the bases of the Basij is attacking the security of the country. The one who ridicules the army or the IRGC in their statements or speeches is insulting the country's security. Weakening the organizations in the armed forces means weakening the security of the country. The result of weakening the police is strengthening the criminals.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The police have a duty to stand up to the criminals and ensure the safety of the public. The person who attacks the police is actually leaving the people defenseless against criminals, thugs, thieves, and extortionists. A great advantage that our country has is that the security we have has been built from within. It makes a big difference with a country or a nation creates security for itself from within with its own forces, with its own power and with its own thoughts and ideas, compared to a country that has a foreign power telling them that they will provide them with security and protection. That is like a person protecting his milking cow. These are two very different things. Our security has been built from within. We rely on no one for our security. we have succeeded in creating and maintaining this security with the strength that God has given us. God's grace, the support of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, may Allah hasten his appearance, the support of the nation, and the persistence of the officials in the armed forces.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Tens of Palestinians took to the streets after prayer, expressing their support with the Palestinian prisoners and Israeli jails against the repressive measures and policies initiated by the far-right Israeli Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir. Thousands of Palestinian political prisoners in Israeli prisons continue for the 22nd day of collective disobedience measures in response to the ongoing repression campaign. Islamic Jihad movement has affirmed its support for the Palestinian prisoners' civil disobedience actions in the face of the Israeli fanatic measures, stressing that the prisoners will never be abandoned.
We declare in the Islamic Jihad that we stand with the Palestinian prisoners and support their civil disobedience actions. And even if the measures escalated to an open-ended hunger strike, we will support them and ready for all the possibilities. We will never abandon them.
On top of these measures is the approval of a draft bill that would authorize the execution of the Palestinian detainees that have performed anti-occupation operations. The campaign is expected to culminate on the first day of the upcoming holy fasting month of Ramadan, with a full-scale hunger strike bearing the banner of freedom or martyrdom. Palestinian prisoner's father expressed his concerns over the hunger strike step, calling for the international organizations to support the prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners' families live in stress over the lives of their sons and daughters in Israeli jails, as hunger strike is the most difficult thing a prisoner can endure, and it threatens their lives.
Palestinians chanted slogans against the far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir and called for the immediate halt of the repressive measures.
Our prisoners' cause is a just one, and we support them in everything they take against the Israeli measures. We call on the world to support the Palestinian prisoners and put pressure on the Zionist occupation to stop passing the law and stop repressive measures against prisoners and detainees.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip stressed that Israel's hostile policies will never stop them from exercising the right to resist the regime and its settlers. Al Asif, Gaza.
The
this year's International Women's Day has seen the United Nations raising the alarm about the situation of women in Afghanistan. The UNICEF has announced that the number of malnourished, pregnant and breastfeeding women in the country has increased by 49%. According to the UN agency, nearly 3 million women and young girls in Afghanistan suffer from undernutrition.
The current situation of Afghanistan has affected all sections of Afghan society, especially pregnant and breastfeeding women. You know that pregnant and breastfeeding mothers are the most vulnerable. Most of the mother patients we receive nowadays are severely undernourished, which results from acute poverty. People living in the hospital's neighborhood are going through harsh economic conditions.
As the war-torn country is gripped by multiple crises, Afghan women and children are hit the hardest. Doctors and experts emphasize the need for continued relief fund for Afghans, especially women.
Undoubtedly, Afghanistan today is dependent on aid, and such assistance is of high importance because they can save lives, especially those of malnourished children and pregnant women. It is better not to politicize the treatment and well-being of mothers and children. I hope donors continue to provide aid to the country's health sector and improve people's conditions.
Most households in Afghanistan are relying on their male breadwinners. In many cases, they fail to make ends meet or provide enough food for their families, as the country has been grappling with an economic crisis, mainly caused by the freezing of Afghan assets by Western countries. The U.S. and its allies have frozen Afghan assets and aid after the Taliban took power in 2021, following the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from the country. This year on International Women's Day, Afghan women are in great distress as they experience rapidly deteriorating conditions. Advocates are calling for greater support and attention for the well-being of Afghan women. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Dozens of people, many fleeing war and persecution, risk their lives every day in makeshift boats like this one, crossing the English Channel to seek asylum in the UK. But a new government bill here is about to change that.
People must know that if they come here illegally, it will result in their detention and swift removal. Once this happens, and they know it will happen, they will not come and the boats will stop.
The previous government's so-called Rwanda plan that would see migrants deported to Rwanda has not been implemented after legal challenges from rights groups. The government argues the law will stop the business of people smugglers. The UN has called the bill a clear breach of the Refugee Convention, and rights activists say it is unethical and unworkable.
It's absolutely ridiculous. People will continue to exploit vulnerable people who are desperately trying to flee oppressive regimes, you know, flee from countries where they have no hope, no rights, and no future. People smugglers don't care about processes and procedures and what will happen the other end. They care about collecting their money and making sure boats or trains or whatever pushes out with human cargo on it.
2022 saw a record 25,000 people arriving in the UK by boat. 31 died trying, raising questions about the functionality of the UK's asylum system.
Well, it certainly isn't fit for purpose. It is very, very bureaucratic. But it also takes too long to, for instance, give those claiming asylum with the skills and experience that we are very short of here in the United Kingdom.
And then there's Brexit. Before it, the UK shared a returns policy with the EU that allowed it to send migrants back to the countries they had first arrived in. There is no such deal in place now.
The bill is unlikely to face much opposition in the building behind me, where the Conservatives have a majority, but we're yet to see how it'll fare in the courts. Critics are also saying that it's a gimmick by the government to win more votes among its conservative base at the next general election. Saeed Purza, London.
And-
An alliance of six Turkish opposition parties has nominated Republican People Party chairman Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu as the joint presidential candidate. Kılıçdaroğlu will be running against President Recep Tayyip Erdogan in the upcoming May 14 elections, with mayors of Istanbul and Ankara, Ekrem İmamoğlu and Mansur Yavaş, to be appointed as vice presidents. This was the condition of İyi Parti leader Meral Akşener to rejoin the alliance after a debate last week, where she refused the naming of Kılıçdaroğlu.